What's going on, everybody? It's that time again, the Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 252 on this Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green with you. First show in 8 days. Very weird layoff for us. We don't usually go this long without a show. Colin and I, different schedules, couldn't link up last week. And then I had some dental stuff yesterday. Took me out of commission completely. I was not in shape to do a show, but I'm back. I'm ready to go. Good to go today. And Tom and I have a lot to talk about. We're going to continue our spring primer series. Two more positions today. Going to finish up on offense. And then we got to hit the full weekend of sports. Men's basketball, women's basketball. We're into March. It's the most wonderful time of the year. The postseason has arrived for college hoops. And we're going to get into all that with both of those programs, where they stand right now, getting into the month of March. And we'll recap the weekends that were on the diamond for OU softball and baseball as well. So a lot to get to. We'll do so on the show today. A reminder, though, before we get started, subscribe, Sooners Illustrated, Oklahoma.247sports.com. Promo code SoonersPod60, all one word for listening on podcasts, gets you 60% off a VIP membership for a year to Sooners Illustrated and the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Jump in. Spring ball's coming. Recruiting is about to massively pick up. By the way, the dead period is over. Huge recruiting weekend coming up this weekend. Colin and I are going to get into that on the show on Thursday. Be sure to be plugged in. A lot coming in that area. Spring ball recruiting, all that here in the next, really coming up the next couple of days especially. So be sure to subscribe. Be with us every step of the way as Sooners Illustrated. All right, let's get into it. We're coming up on spring ball. We're getting very, very close. We're just about a few weeks away. A little programming note for next week. Tom and I show will probably be on Tuesday again. There's an expectation. Nothing official yet. But there's an expectation there will be some football stuff on Monday to kind of kick off the spring. First practice, not for another few weeks, but probably going to be some football stuff next Monday down in Norman. So likely going to be next Tuesday for us. But we're getting closer to that time. We're into March now. Last week on the show, we started our spring primer series where we're kind of combing our way through the roster, hitting some of the names and storylines to watch throughout spring ball. We did quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers last week. Let's do the other two positions on offense, Tom. Starting with tight ends, this is the position that got the biggest overhaul. We knew it would. It was talked about throughout the season and has been for a few seasons now. Not really been a strength for Oklahoma the way that they're used to in the history of the program. New tight ends coach Jason Witten comes in, the big splash hire of the offseason, replaces Joe John Finley. And then they went portal shopping. Witten got Hayden Hansen from Florida, Rocky Beers from Colorado State, Jack Van Dorsler from Tennessee. It's a totally different room, Tom, with a new coach. There's a lot of new faces every year with the portal, but this is the position that's going to be the most just unrecognizable. It's completely changed over. And I think fans are pretty excited about it, and rightfully so, because this is a position that needed to get better, and it certainly looks like on paper that it got a lot better.
Yeah, like you said, it's the position that most needed a makeover. Just kind of been underwhelming for the last several years. Last year you had a little bit of a surprise with Jaron Cannon kind of emerging after making that position change from linebacker to tight end. But even then, like, the production wasn't overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And then you let go of Joe John Finley at the end of the season. You bring in Jason Witten, which, like you mentioned, kind of a splash hire, but also a little bit of a question mark. Just because Jason Witten, one of the best tight ends in NFL history, coached really well at the high school level for a few years, has not coached in any capacity in the college level. I don't think that's going to be a hindrance to him, but I'm just really curious to see how his, personal experience playing the position and his few years experience at the high school level so far kind of translate to the SEC. I think he can do it. Obviously, a lot of people think he can do it. Like, it's not out of the ordinary for a guy to make the jump from high school coaching to college coaching. It happens all the time. But I'm just really interested to see what he's able to do with that new look room, because, like you said, it's completely overhauled from a personnel standpoint. Bring in three talented transfers. I think we're going to see all three of them in some capacity. We'll see how much for each. But it's going to be a really intriguing group, because it's a position that was really been a weak spot on this offense for several years now.
Yeah, no, we talked about it whenever they hired Witten, that, whoa, what a splash hire, what a big name. I have very little doubt that he'll be able to get players, because I would think any tight end would want to come play for Jason Witten. I mean, that's He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. He's a name that was in the NFL recently that I'm sure even high school kids today are aware of. You know, time moves quick. It seems like a no-brainer for us. But I think that high school kids still very are well aware of the name Jason Wynn, especially in the name in the state of Texas, obviously, where Oklahoma's going to recruit more than any other state. And so I'm with you. But there is still an unknown just in terms of, like, how well can he coach and develop guys at this level? He hasn't really done that. You definitely lean that he'll be okay, but, you know, who knows, right? It is a little bit of an unknown. For you, just in your mind, and this is a question that will be answered over the course of spring and certainly into the season, do you have an obvious pecking order of these tight ends? Because obviously you bring Hansen in. It seems like he's the guy with Rocky Beers, but then you go get Van Dorsler, who's a younger dude coming from Tennessee where he was productive. Could all three of these guys have a role this season, you think? Like, what's – how do you kind of envision this shaking out? Because I think there's a lot of excitement all three of these guys, and I kind of question, like, what exactly each one will bring to the table when it's all said and done. It's exciting, but it's kind of just interesting. It's going to be fun to kind of sort that out as we get into spring ball here coming up pretty soon.
Right. I think I mentioned before, but I do think that all three of them can have a role in this offense. Sure. You know, Jack Van Dorsler is probably the most interesting one to me because I think he has the highest upside of the group, but he's also the youngest. So those two things kind of go hand in hand. Right. I'd expect Hayden Hansen to be the number one guy there. You know, 6'8", about 250 pounds. He's got 34 career starts in the SEC already. And, you know, he's the kind of blocking tight end that Oklahoma just hasn't had in years. You know, he's got a good ability to set the edge and really help pave the way for that run game, which really needs to improve, as we kind of touched on last week. You know, he was Florida's third leading receiver last year, but, you know, it's interesting. Like, he was mostly used as an inline tight end. So he's got kind of that build to be more of a blocker, but he's also got the, you know, like I said, 6'8", 250 pounds, like that wingspan. He could be a real valuable, you know, red zone target and kind of safety valve for John Mateer. So I think that he heads into the spring as your number one guy, whereas I think Rocky Beers will be that guy that can come in two tight end sets, be a little bit more of a receiver. You know, he led Colorado State in receiving last year. He's also very experienced, another good red zone target, big body. And then, you know, Jack Van Dorsler, I think he can do a little bit of everything. You know, I'd expect him to, you know, work his way into the mix, but kind of like be the guy in 2027, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely does, because that was, you know, the one thing with Hansen and Beers. This is both a one-year deal for them. Mm-hmm. But Van Dorsler, his whole career essentially is still in front of him. So it made sense why they wanted a younger guy in that room. And I'm with you. It's going to be fun. I'm on record a couple times. I think Hayden Hansen might have a sneakily more productive receiving year than maybe he's being touted as being and what he did at Florida. It was a lot. Jaron Kanick had a really good year, you know, was actually – all SEC third team, amazingly, but didn't score a touchdown somewhat famously, right? I mean, it was a conversation during the season. I think Hansen in the red zone is going to be something that Ben Arbuckle and John Mateer look for. And maybe that doesn't shake out that way. That's just kind of a feeling I get that that's going to be a thing. And
yeah,
it'll be fun. So I'll see all these new guys coming up very, very soon. That'll be an intriguing. And hopefully, you know, we get to meet these guys here soon and certainly get to look at them in practice and stuff later in the month. But the tight end room, definitely just a totally different look, which it needed. It needed a different look. And so it's exciting, fairly so.
I was going to say on the Hayden Hansen note, like with the red zone, you can't teach 6'8".
Exactly.
That doesn't come on trees. You know, like you got a guy like that. You take advantage of having him in the red zone.
No doubt. 100%. And, you know, you still have a couple of the returning pieces. Cade McIntyre is back. John Locke is back. And you also have Trinae Washington goes into year two. They bring in Tyler Ruxer, signing freshman. Ryder Mix injured right now, but he'll be, you know, healthy later on in the year. I don't think during spring, but, you know, into fall camp, stuff like that. So there's a lot of new faces in the room, and obviously the biggest one being the coach in Jason Witten. So exciting stuff at the tight end spot. Let's finish up offense. Let's go to the offensive line. A lot of excitement here. You're bringing back four starters from last year. You're only losing Sebeki Wiwu. As far as that starting five, Jake Michael, your center, is back. And then the young guys, Eddie Pierre-Louis and the true freshmen from last year, Michael Fasusi and Ryan Foje. You also bring back Keith Ozaida, who seemed to be right in the mix as a potential starter, obviously. They went in the portal here as well pretty hard, got themselves a backup center option in Caleb Nitta. Obviously, Amarian Harris is exciting from Arkansas. People think he could very well be in that conversation to crack that starting five. Tom, a lot of excitement about the offensive line. You know, this is a group that hasn't been terrible. I mean, obviously in 24, it was rough with the injuries, and it was not pretty at times. But last year, it felt like the second half of the year was pretty good. It was at least, you know, better than it had been. And now it feels like you're in position to, you know, get back to kind of those Bill Beam offensive lines that were pumping out NFL guys every year. Maybe not like the Joe Moore Award level from like 2018 range, but should be pretty good, it feels like, on paper. Where are you at offensive line? And what are maybe the guys you're most intrigued to see here in the next few weeks whenever spring ball gets going?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty optimistic on kind of just where this offensive line is coming into 2026. Because like you said, you bring back four guys that started multiple games last season and really finished the season as starters, essentially. Right. Except for Jake Michael, who, you know, your starter went healthy all year and then had that infection that kind of sidelined him late in the year. But you really like what you saw from, you know, those young guys, the Michael Fasusi, the Ryan Foje, the Eddie Pierre-Louis, who really in their first playing experience stood up pretty well. And obviously those guys all have really high ceilings that Oklahoma's excited about. So I think those guys being able to plug back in, at left tackle for Michael Fasusi, left guard for Eddie Pierre-Louis, and then, you know, Foje is a little bit interesting just because you do bring in Amarian Harris. It's like, do you like Ryan Foje at right guard, or do you like him more at right tackle? Amarian Harris got a lot of experience at right tackle. So there's a little bit of optionality there, especially with Hito Zaida moving over to the right side too, even though, you know, he's spent most of his time at the left side, but, you know, is moving over to the right side. Is like, can he kind of be that swing guy who, you know, you can kind of slot where you need him, but will compete with Ryan Foje at right guard while, you know, Foje could be, you know, either at right guard or right tackle there with Harris. I'm really interested in that. And then with Caleb Nitta, I'm curious just like how much can he push Jake Michael? I thought Jake Michael was really good in spots last year. We'll see, like, what – I don't know what recovery looks like from an infection like that. I'm sure it involves losing a lot of weight and muscle just from being in the hospital and dealing with that. And like, you need to build that back up. But we've heard some good things about Caleb Nitta and what he can kind of bring at that center spot as a backup center. And as we know from these last few years at Oklahoma, you can't have too many quality centers, just given what they've gone through the last few years.
No doubt. It just feels like, you know, on paper, there's a lot of flexibility, and you definitely have 7, 8, maybe more guys who can play for you legitimate snaps. You loop in Georgia Tech, you know, Peyton Joseph comes in, and some of these other rising guys that are kind of waiting in the wings, your Daniel Akinkunmi's, you know, guys like that, that are just kind of in the background, slowly getting bigger and stronger and getting better, obviously, with each year. And it's like, they got some dudes. They got some dudes. And obviously, the exciting is the Fasusi Foje combination, just because those guys came in as true freshmen and were pretty good, you know, and so they're only going to get better. And so it's, again, I don't know if I'm expecting Joe Moore Award level or, you know, those offensive lines that Baker and Kyler had that were just literally all those guys were in the NFL and like a lot of them still are, but it should be pretty good. And you pair that with what they did at the running back room, you know, with Dale McCullough coming in, like hopefully they have a better run game. So, yeah, reasons to be optimistic here on the offensive line for sure. So exciting stuff for Bill Beatonbow and that unit. So I think that's it on offense. Overall, offensively, right? I mean, a lot of reasons to think it's going to be better. I mean, obviously, it was awful 2 years ago. It was better, but still not good enough last year. And you look overall, you're feeling like John Mateer back, Ben Arbuckle year two. You improved your skill talent. It's hard not to feel like they're in a much better place offensively. We'll see how it translates to the actual games when we get to, you know, September, but hard not to think this offense isn't going to be better than it was last year. It just seems impossible that it wouldn't be. You never know, I guess, but overall, you got to feel confident that they're going to take a step forward on that side.
Yeah, and you don't need them to be world beaters. Again, we went through this last year. It's like with the defense as good as it is and where you know it's kind of been trending under Brent Venables, you don't need a top 10 or even a top 20 offense. But, you know, top 30, top 40, top 50 even. Like, and that's just not just in scoring, but, like, in the efficiency areas where, you know, like last year running the ball, they had their worst year in terms of, like, yards per game since 1999. had their worst year in terms of yards per carry since 2010. If you can just be more effective and, you know, stay on the field more and be a little bit more consistent, you're going to be in a better spot than you were last year when you went, you know, 10-3 and still made the college football playoff.
Right.
Like, you don't need these gigantic improvements. You just need to kind of improve in the margins. And like, when you do that, you'll see kind of an accumulation of, you know, those little bit here, a little bit there, just kind of adds up in the long run.
For sure. So that's it on offense. We'll flip over to defense next week. We'll hit a few defensive positions and also then clean that up the following week. And the week after that, we'll be setting the table for spring ball coming up later this month. One guy we won't really be talking about in the defensive portion of this, or at least just more than just saying he'll no longer be here, is Owen Heineke. Kind of old news here, but wanted to make sure we caught up on it and put a bow on it a little bit. Owen Heineke's appeal was officially denied by the NCAA last week. He was out at the combine in Indianapolis. He's, you know, obviously moving forward with the NFL. He was at the Senior Bowl. You know, it's been good stuff for Owen, and he wanted the extra year, but he's not going to get it. You know, we've talked about it at length. Everyone has. I don't get this. I don't know why he didn't get it. I don't know why he didn't get the appeal. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know if it's a little bit of just bad timing for Owen, and that the NCAA is like trying to get their hands back on this thing. And so they're almost kind of like, no, like just get out of here, even though he had a pretty good case actually. But anyway, Owen Heineke not going to be back. It would have been great for Oklahoma to get him back. We kind of all along thought he wouldn't be. So it's not like some massive, like, whoa, like the rug pulled out. They thought they had this guy. It kind of always felt like they weren't going to have him. So from that perspective, it's not like, you know, it's not some massive loss from that perspective, but again, it would have been great to have him. But yeah, Owen Heineke officially looks like done in an OU uniform, and he'll be turning his attention fully 100% to the draft, you know, next month now.
Yeah, like you said, you know, not unexpected. You know,
yeah.
Even when we spoke to him back before the playoff, he was like,
yeah, hey, right.
I'm going to petition for it, but I'm not optimistic. You know, like you said, we'll get into it more a little bit next week with, you know, what it means for the linebacker room overall. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it does make you wonder. It's like, could they have tried to push to keep Kobe McKenzie for another year, just knowing the unlikelihood of Owen Heineke not getting it? But, you know, I think they're still going to be in pretty good shape, just kind of need some of those young guys to come along. But for Owen, I mean, like, he's a guy who, you know, might be a day three NFL draft pick at this point, which is kind of amazing given just like where his story started. You know, he had a pretty good showing at the NFL combine. I know he turned some heads at the Senior Bowl. You know, he's a guy that's obviously, you know, going to cut his teeth on special teams when he makes it to the league. But, you know, Jim Nagy and some other people seem to think that, you know, he can surprise some people and stick in the league for, you know, maybe get to that second contract, which is kind of the goal for everybody. Once you get to the NFL, it's like, okay, you get that rookie deal, but and you get that second deal and extend that career.
100%. And so, yeah, we'll all be pulling for Owen. It was a heck of a story. He had a great year. He was, you know, had a few moments where he was one of Oklahoma's legitimately one of their best defensive players. And so, cool story for him. He would have, you know, he was open about it. I want the extra year. Obviously ends up not getting it, but at the end of the day, it could be worse. I mean, he's going to get an NFL shot. I don't know if he'll get drafted. I tend to think he will, but even if he somehow doesn't, he will get signed. Like, he's going to get a shot, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, that's cool. And we'll all be pulling for him over the next, you know, month plus. And maybe we'll see him at Pro Day, you know, doing some stuff, I would think. He'll at least be there, obviously. But talk to him one more time, theoretically, next week for Pro Day. So, a story closes there. And like Tom said, we'll get into the linebacker room next week with the primer series. But, yeah, going to be leaning on some young guys. And we'll talk about that more next week.
Yeah, and look, if he wanted to, he could have, you know, pursued the legal route and, you know, try to get an injunction or, you know, a temporary restraining order to, you know, kind of force the hand there and get that 6 year. But I think because he has, you know, that NFL possibility kind of still looming out there for him, that it's just simpler. It's less of a headache. You know, it's more cost effective just be like, all right, like turn the page. As much as he'd like to get back to Oklahoma for another year, just like go pro, man.
Yeah.
Make more money doing what you like to do.
Yeah. No, I think he's good with it. And I think he's good with it. Had a great year. They went to the playoffs, had some great wins. You know, I mean, again, wanted the year, but I think he's you know, at peace with it. So we'll see where he winds up in the draft here coming up in, you know, about a month and a half, 2 months or so, coming to the back end of April.
The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break.
All right, let's do some other sports. It is March. It is the best month of the year for college hoops. Very exciting. Conference tournament week coming up. It's already arrived for the women. They'll be playing the SEC tournament here in just a couple of days. We'll get into that in just a second. Let's first start with the men. Tom, are we doing this again? Is there life? We're all sick. They've won 4 of 6. They've won 4 of 6. They won both games last week. They won Tuesday night against Auburn. Looked pretty good, truthfully. Nigel Pack playing really well. Mohamed Wagi playing quite well. They went to Baton Rouge and won on Saturday. Like I said, they have won 4 of 6 games, believe it or not. You got 2 quad one opportunities coming up this week. I know you've been playing around with, you know, the simulators and stuff like that. You know, is there any shot at all here? They're 5-11 SEC play. Obviously, you have to win these 2 games, but, like, you know, they're playing pretty well right now, but is it too little too late? Where are you at with this team right now as we get into March, 2 games left in the regular season? Are they just playing at the string and hoping to get the auto bid, or is there maybe even a small chance that they could still get back onto the bubble?
There's a glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
It's a non-zero chance.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, you've seen Dumb and Dumber, so you're saying, yes, there's a chance.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, so, like, it almost feels like realistically, this team is not going to make the NCAA tournament.
Sure.
They've been playing really well, you know, for essentially the last month, just about, after that 9-game losing streak. And there's still an opportunity in front of them because, like you said, you can get two more quad one wins this week. If you can beat Missouri, you know, Tuesday night at home in the final game at Lloyd Noble Center this season, and then turn around and go down to Austin on Saturday and beat Texas. Yeah. And at that point, you would have had 3 straight quad one wins, because I believe the LSU game was a quad one win still, because of just kind of where LSU is and where it was, you know, it being on the road, you get a little bit more leeway there just in terms of the net window. So you need to win those 2 games first and foremost. And then kind of based on where the standings are right now with the SEC tournament, Oklahoma, I think, would draw Ole Miss in the first round. It's an Ole Miss team Oklahoma can beat. It has beaten.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Ole Miss has not played very well. I know they just beat Auburn, but Auburn's been in kind of a tailspin of its own. And then you get right now, I think it would be Kentucky in the second round, which is kind of a nightmare again, considering where you were last year and, you know, what Otego and Brandon Garrison, sure, have been able to do these last 2 years. But if you can win those 2 games, you're at like a coin flip as to whether or not you're getting an at-large bid. Like, you're right there on like the last 4 in, first 4 out line. So it's possible.
Yeah.
It's very possible. Like, you need to continue to play your best basketball these next 2 weeks. And, you know, like, they've got some veteran guys who have played in big moments this time of year. Like you mentioned, Nigel Pack has done this before. He's been to the Final Four. Like, he's been around a long time. He's got over 2,000 career points, 400 made 3-pointers. Like, and he's playing really well right now. You've got some veteran guys who are on last year's team. You know, even though Jadon Jones didn't play, he was part of that team, and he's playing well right now. Dayden Forsyth playing some of his best basketball now that he's healthy. Mo Agui, you know, kind of just like last year, like, you get to Ramadan and he just becomes
Ramadan Mo. Yeah.
I believe the note was this 3-game stretch right now is the first time in his career he scored double digits in 3 straight games.
Wow. That's unbelievable. This is right about the time last year where he took off too.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's playing really well. Yeah. And so, like, you have hope. It is very slim hope, and you need to handle business in these last 2 regular season games to, you know, really keep that hope alive, unless you're banking on, you know, just a miraculous run to the SEC tournament title, which, again, is always possible, but incredibly improbable. But, like, you look back a month ago and we left this team for dead when they were losing 9 in a row. And it might come down to it again, where, you know, you get to Selection Sunday and this team is one of the first 4 teams out again. just as it has been, you know, a few other times during Paul Mosier's tenure. And then you look back at, you know, like that first Missouri game where you give up two buzzer beaters, one at the end of regulation and one in overtime to lose. You look at some of these other games where you just couldn't close in the final 4 minutes, or you gave up a double-digit lead in the first half and think about what could have been. But somehow, again, improbably, they're heading into March playing somewhat meaningful basketball, you know, with, you know, as Nigel Pack put it yesterday, this biased belief that if, you know, they handle their business, they can do anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, they're into March still feeling like they're playing for something, which is, you know, that in and of itself is a win with where it was. You know, like you said, certainly at the end of that 9-game skid, it felt like this thing is definitely over, especially, you know, when they lose the A&M game, that was really kind of the final, like, yeah, this ain't happening. But they somehow continue to get off the mat and keep playing hard and keep battling, like you said, Nigel admitting like a biased belief, like we're going to still think we can do this until we're literally told that we can't, you know? And so they're going to keep battling. Like you said, it's beating a dead horse, but it's just those games, you know, the Mississippi State loss and the South Carolina loss, certainly not closing out Missouri. Like if you could just get one or two of those going back, you're feeling like you have a chance. And look, the reality is this year, the bubble stinks. The bubble's not any good. Auburn is in the field right now. And they're not good at all. They're benefiting just from having a really hard schedule. But they've lost. They just, like you said, they just lost Ole Miss. They have 15, I think, losses now. Like, it's crazy. And, you know, Ohio State is projected in the field right now. They beat Purdue the other day. That was their second quad one win. Oh, you can get two of those this week alone. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not saying they're going to get there. I don't think they will, obviously. But the bubble is really, really thin. And so you're thinking, who knows? I mean, who knows, right? I mean, if you go and pad that resume, it may look okay when it's all said and done. They may look up and be like, hey, this team's won, you know, 6 of 8 to close regular season. They piled up some more quad one wins. Who knows, right? So it's all you can do. So we'll see what happens this week. Missouri tonight for senior night. A few guys going out in the final game. Tay Davis, Jadon Jones, Mo Wagee, Nigel Pack, and Reed Lovelace. And they close at Texas on Saturday night. Obviously non-negotiable. You have to win both to have any even a remote conversation. And so we'll see what they do. Tom and I will be at the LNC tonight for Missouri coming to town. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and a quick note on senior night. Even though Jeff Nwankwo is listed as a redshirt senior on the roster, they're going to try to get him another year. Just because he played JUCO for 2 years. So it's kind of the Diego Pavia route. It's like, does JUCO eligibility really count toward your NCAA eligibility? So they're going to try to get him another year of eligibility. And then just one other thing I want to say is, like, you know, we talked about it. Like, we left this team for dead a month ago. A lot of people did. But, you know, credit to them and, you know, credit to Porter Moser and his staff. I know a lot of people are out on Porter and feel like this is going to be the end of it for him. But these guys have not quit on him, despite everything they've been through. And I think that says a lot about just, again, their belief in themselves, but also that their belief in the coaching staff and like what they think they can accomplish and, you know, how good they think they really are compared to what their record has said they are. I just think that's kind of, you know, noteworthy as we head into March here.
No doubt, 100% is. And that's another part of the calculus, too. Obviously, like you said, the coaching situation has been heavily discussed all season. When you're looking at the offseason, which is coming up a few weeks away, more than likely, you know, is what they've done down the stretch here swaying anything one way or another in terms of Porter's future? That is another part of the equation that I don't know. Obviously, you're just speculating, but, you know, it's just going to be a very interesting few weeks for this program. And obviously when the season ends, I would think one way or another, we'll probably know pretty quick what's happening with this team moving into next year. So very interesting stuff. We talked about it the last few weeks, like Roger Denny, a decision to figure out and, you know, does this playing well at the end of the year and the fact they haven't quit, does that do anything? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Obviously we'll find out soon enough, but Missouri tonight, the LNC, we'll see. You win that and we'll see where we're at going into the weekend, obviously, and then back into next week. And Tom and I will kind of give a little State of the Union, certainly, going into the SEC tournament in Nashville next week. As for the women, they're into the conference tournament now. Their schedule is so weird because they're in the conference tournament, and then there's a week of nothing. And then they have the NCAA tournament where they catch up to the men. They're like a week ahead of the men until the tournament, and then they line up. But they've won six in a row. They handled their business. They had a couple of, much easier games than what they've had with Arkansas and Missouri. They demolish Arkansas. They stink. Missouri is not terrible. It was on the road, but they, handled their business, got the job done. They've won six in a row. I feel like they've pretty much completely locked up getting that top four at this point. I'd be surprised if they didn't get it. And really the conversation now is their shot at a three and avoiding a one seed all the way until potentially the Elite Eight. Feels like that's definitely on the table. But Tom Virginie B and the crew, they're playing their best ball at the right time, seemingly, and they've piled up those ranked wins, couple of them on the road, six-game win streak going into the SEC tournament where they are the five seed, same as last year. Feels like they're, you have to feel as confident now as at any point this year that, hey, we're playing well. Let's go see what we can do in March, right? It's kind of go time now for Jenny B and this crew.
Yeah, you mentioned it. They're playing some of their best basketball of the season right now. Mm-hmm. And, they certainly have a top four seed locked up. The selection committee rolled out its updated top 16 seeds on Sunday, I believe it was. And, they're up to a three seed. They're in that 12 spot right now.
Yeah, so
they're in position right now to avoid those one seeds until you get to, further down the road. So if they can, make some noise in the SEC tournament and, not look poorly.
Yeah.
You'd think that they're going to be in a pretty good spot to, lock up that top three seed.
I think it would come down to that LSU game. I mean, if they don't blow it to Florida or Mississippi State, who's a 12-13, they should win that. It'd be pretty shocking to not. They then play LSU in the 5-4 in the quarterfinals. It feels like if you could beat LSU, you're probably going to get a three. If you don't, you may still, but it's, obviously a lot less likely. So we'll see. Yeah. They're going to kind of play for it on presumably Friday if they can avoid upset on Thursday. They'll play LSU in the afternoon, which, they were in the same spot last year, and they went and they got it. They were the five seed. They took care of business, and then they beat Kentucky, and then they got a three seed in the NCAA tournament. So can they go do that again? That'd be the question. The other question, and Tom, it's just opinion, would you rather be a four seed going to Fort Worth and playing a UConn or something, or would you rather be a three seed going out to Sacramento and maybe playing, instead of a one, obviously you'd be playing a two in the Sweet 16. That's kind of the trade-off there. Now, you could get the best of both worlds where you're a three seed in Fort Worth. That's obviously the best-case scenario, but that's kind of – because that projection had them as a three seed going out to Sacramento. So it's like you want to be close to Fort Worth, but you also don't want to play a one if you can avoid it. So it's kind of like, what would you prefer? I would imagine you probably would rather get the higher seed, but it would be nice to be in Fort Worth, certainly, to have a lot more OU fans there than you would out in California, I would think.
Yeah, I would still lean Sacramento because you look at the teams that are in that two seed right now. It's like none of them are from out there. You have Vanderbilt, Iowa, LSU, and Michigan are the two seeds right now.
Right.
And no one is remotely close to Sacramento. So I don't think it's going to be like a, totally hostile crowd out there. Again, you'd certainly love to have the fan support being in Fort Worth, but I think avoiding those one seeds, especially in, women's college basketball, where the ones are just kind of a tier above everybody else. You have a little less parity, it feels like, because, you have UConn, you have UCLA, you have South Carolina, right now you have Texas there. It's like, those teams are all really good. And again, like all the teams in the top 16 are solid. But if you can avoid those top four as long as you can, I think you take that trade-off 10 times out of 10. I am curious, though, like you said, that you get to LSU on Friday. Just how much can a win over LSU boost you up? Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, LSU is number 7 in the top 16 right now. So they're kind of on the edge of being a 2 versus being a 3. It's like, I think if Oklahoma wins that game, both those teams end up being a 3. But again, like you never know how much stock the committee puts in the conference tournament compared to, the regular season resume.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be interesting. If you could somehow get where you're a 3 and you're playing like an Iowa as a 2 and then the 1 is Texas, like not that that's easy because it's not. It's very tough. But it's like you feel like that is like if you're going to get to a Final Four somehow, that would probably be how it would happen. It's exciting stuff, and they're out in Greenville this week, and playing the SEC tournament that starts on Thursday, like we said, and you'll have post-game press conferences will be on the YouTube channel throughout the postseason, SEC and NCAA for Jenny B and the team. So be sure to check those out after the game to hear from the team throughout this run, however long it may go, over the next few weeks. All right, let's go over to the diamond to wrap up before we get out of here. Softball was home for the first time this weekend, played a bunch of teams that they were going to annihilate. We knew that going in, and they did. Any takeaways at all? I mean, it's a tough week. I mean, they just destroyed teams, obviously, throughout the weekend. But I know you were plugged into these games. Obviously, you had the coverage over on Sooners Illustrated. Just if you have a few takeaways, fire them off. Because, I mean, obviously, it's always hard to know what to gather from games like this where they won one game, literally 32-0. You know what I mean? So,
and then 23-run inning in another one.
that is unbelievable. Like, okay. Seriously shocked. Like, I said on the VIP board, I double read the headlines. I was doing something. I think I was doing other work at the time, and I was – did I read that right? 20? It's insanity, truly.
Yeah. Like you said, it's kind of hard to have like concrete takeaways when they're playing lower level competition like they did this weekend.
Yeah.
I think it just kind of affirmed some of the things that we've already established with this team. It's like, yes, like look, the home run pace is not going to stay like this throughout the season.
We're talking about them breaking the records, and it's like they might, but like they're going to start playing teams that can actually hang with them soon.
Yeah, but you do have 80 home runs in 3 weeks already,
which is stupid. Yeah,
yeah, 30 of them in 6 games at home, which is just wild. But just kind of on that note, it's like some of these freshmen are truly special, man. Kendall Wells is just tearing it up at the plate. Kai Miner's riding a 16-game hitting streak. Alyssa Parker's kind of that two-way player, you know, both in the circle and able to play multiple spots in the field and hit the way she's been hitting. It's really impressive. Lexi McDaniels had some big moments too. But I think like the bigger takeaways coming out of this weekend are what's the status of Nellie McEnroe-Marinus. She didn't play much of the weekend because she was dealing with a shoulder, some soreness in her shoulder. Came in a couple spots to play defense for an inning or so, but then in that final game of the weekend, she got the start at third base, and I think it was in the third inning, just kind of collided with Kendall Wells on on a ball in the infield, and came up with a knee injury, and I believe it was Monday she was getting an X-ray on it to see what happened. So we'll see. You're obviously concerned about that because she is one of your best all-around players, and she's already lost a season due to injury before.
Right.
Now, if she is hurt, like this team is deep enough that it's got the players that it can fill in for her, even though you would hate to lose her. Sydney Barker's played well. Lacey McDaniel can slide over there too. Like they have the players that could fill in at third there, but none of them are quite as good as Nellie is, especially in the field. She's incredible at third base there. So I think that's the big question coming out of the weekend. And I think the other thing is just you still kind of feel like Audrey Lowry is your number one option in the mound, or in the circle rather. Sure. And I think you still have questions about whether you can pitch Kirsten Deal once you get to SEC play in a couple weeks. She's just struggled, just given up a lot of home runs, a lot of hits, and is just, feels like she doesn't really have an out pitch right now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I think she'll have one more shot, this week, before we get to SEC play, and then, kind of see where it's at from there. But I think like once you get into those meaningful games, me personally, I'd have a hard time trusting her right now in a big spot.
No, that's definitely fair. And like you said, SEC play is looming. So we'll learn more about them here coming up soon. But, yeah, I'll say dominant weekend. Always cool for them to come back home for the first time and play at Love's Field after the fans were out there in droves as per usual. So good stuff for them, though. Like you said, the home run numbers are hilarious. They'll come back down to earth a little bit. But the way they started makes you think like they could break that record that they set.
You're like halfway there through 3 weeks.
Yeah. It's nuts. It really is nuts. So we'll see what that looks like. They're down in North Texas tonight, a little road game on the midweek this evening. And then they are back home this week. Got the schedule here. Louisiana on Friday, Abilene Christian and Louisiana doubleheader on Saturday, and then Abilene Christian again on Sunday. And then they're back home next week for Tulsa before SEC play with Auburn in Norman next weekend. So a lot more home games coming up and SEC play just around the corner for Patty Gasso and the crew. And so we're going to see them play some more comparable competition soon. As far as on the baseball side, pretty good week. I mean, they got their first bit of adversity last week. They got run ruled on Tuesday by Arizona State. That was their first loss of the season. They did bounce back on Wednesday to beat the Sun Devils and get themselves a split. They came back. They're actually down a run in the ninth. And then boom, 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 three hits in a row. Walk-off Jackson Willits with a walk-off double. And then they won the series versus Gonzaga. Kind of late. Two run rules on Friday, Saturday, and kind of just laid a dud on Sunday. Gonna happen. You know, it's baseball. Teams lose games. You would have liked probably to sweep Gonzaga, but I'm never going to complain too much about a series win. You know, I mean, it's not the end of the world by any means. So pretty good week. You know, they go 3-2. We were kind of talking about in the press box, like, might drop a few spots. They actually went up. They went up a spot to 12 in the D1 baseball top 25. I thought they might slide a little bit, but there's been a lot of kind of mayhem in college baseball so far this season. Lots of upsets the first, you know, month or so. So still in great shape. The starting rotation is sensational. They've answered the bell every time so far with Johnson, Mercurius, and Rager. Those three guys have all been really, really good. Still trying to figure out in the midweek, I think, right now, pitching-wise. Going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. They got Dallas Baptist coming in tonight, which has been like an old nemesis. OU fans are scarred from midweek losses to DBU. They have them at home tonight. It's warm weather. It's very windy. DBU, not as good as normal, but still good. They've scored a lot of runs this year, but they've given up a lot of runs, so it might be a high-scoring game tonight. Jaden Barfield going to get the start for OU, his first start of the year. He's not off to a great start this year, but was obviously really good at the tail end of last year in the postseason, so maybe kind of a breakout spot for him tonight against DBU. And Skip Johnson's son is on the staff at DBU now, first time, so that's kind of fun. But yeah, it'll be you know, it's good stuff. They're playing well. They're 10-2. You can't really complain too much about the start. Offensively, it's been really good, and the starting rotation right now looks to be the strength of the team. Which, when you have a starting rotation that you feel really good about all three guys, that's giant. That's huge in college baseball. So kind of like softball, they're gonna get an SEC play soon. Next weekend, they have A&M coming in, so that's exciting because they're gonna get into some big games soon. But yeah, DBU tonight, four-game set with Santa Clara starts on Thursday. So just more games they should win. I mean, again, I'm not going to expect a four-game sweep, but you probably want to get 3 or 4 from Santa Clara, see if you can win tonight, and just keep on feeling good about, you know, where things kind of are right now overall. But I think if you're an OU baseball fan, you got to feel pretty good. It's been a pretty good first start to the season. And, yeah, a lot to like right now, especially with the starting rotation. That's really what stands out, obviously, for the first, you know, few weeks. So good stuff there from them. Anything?
You got it covered.
Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, so – and good weather this week, hopefully. Maybe some rain moving in. Hopefully it doesn't mess with the Santa Clara schedule too much. But, yeah, I'm excited for SEC play for them. This homestand is – just never end. I mean, it's a 17-game homestand is a lot, and it's like, man, there's still a bunch left in it before A&M even comes in here next week. But definitely looking forward to getting SEC play coming up here in the very near future for both baseball and softball, for that matter. All right, I think that's it. We'll be back later this week, Colin and I, on Thursday for sure this time. Got a lot to get into. It's going to be a big recruiting show because Future Freaks weekend coming up, obviously, which is a one of the biggest recruiting weekends of the year for OU football. And so we'll have plenty to talk about on Thursday. He's been out on the road hitting a bunch of camps and stuff. So we have a lot to get into on the recruiting side on Thursday. Tyler and I will be back next week, likely on Tuesday. So keep that in mind. We're probably going to be on Tuesday again next week. So keep an eye out for that, where we'll continue our primer series and hit more football stuff and obviously wrap up the weekends for men's, women's hoops, and softball, baseball like we usually do. So keep an eye out for that. Tom and I'll be at the LNC tonight. More basketball, softball, baseball coverage to come throughout the week. I think that's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.